Good afternoon. I'm going to call taxes to order. And we're going to take Representative Erickson's bill. And Representative Erickson, we don't have a quorum yet, but when we do, we'll actually formally move your bill. But we're ready to hear your bill. We're ready when you are.
We moved this all up.
And I don't know the number even.
Wasn't our choice.
740.
So, okay, so we're hearing House File 740. But again, we don't have a quorum yet, so we cannot move it. Okay, Representative Erickson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. House File 740 is a combination of the lands bill plus the school trust bill. There was three provisions there. One of them basically corrects an 09 wording that prohibited schools from just acquiring land. They had to pay market value kind of thing. That's been fixed now. It also makes sure that if they don't use the land for 3 years, it reverts back to the state, and the other provision is they can't sell it. So that fixed that, and the rest of them are land exchanges from the county to the to other units, and all of them have DNR approval. So I have a couple of people here that will help me out if you have some technical questions, but in essence, that's kind of the bill.
Okay, that's great. You know, we're just trying to figure out where your bill goes, and we believe it's to Ways and Means. So are there testifiers for or against this bill? I'm looking at Representative Carlson, who's walking out of the room. we think this bill needs to go to Ways and Means, but we're not positive on that. Otherwise, it's just to the floor. So I don't know, Representative Carlson, I should have asked you as you're leaving. And we promise, if, and I'm going to ask Ms. Kunish if she could send out an email to members to get to committee, because we don't have a quorum, because we'd like to move this bill.
Is there a future potential
cost? Mr. Michael or Ms. Dalton?
Our future or current cost is small fiscal amount of more than $3,000.
$12,000.
That costs $12,000.
Okay.
Under three, we get the own?
Okay. Representative. So
we've defined, Madam Chair, negligible as anything.
Okay.
So,
Madam Chair?
Yes. So when the motion is, so when we can take the motion, it'll be two ways and means. Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, actually, it's 12,000 positive and 12,000 negative. The net impact of the bill is zero.
Oh. Mr. Representative Carlson, do you want to take a second look at the revenue estimate here?
Well, if it cancels out, then I guess it doesn't. I haven't looked at it. I just heard the 12,000 number.
Maybe Representative Davids wants to take a look at it too here, because I think, I don't know what you were told, Representative Erickson, but this bill, we're just trying to figure out if it should go to Ways and Means or the floor. And so I think between bipartisanly here, if people can try to figure it out, we can just hang on a minute, because I think that's all we really need is to send it where it's got to go. So this is the DNR land sales bill. And it got sent here so taxes could take a look at it, because there's tax forfeited land.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative. Oh, Ms. Schill, please.
Given that, Kathy Schill, House Fiscal, given that there is a revenue gain of $12,000, even though it has netted out, it will have impacts. And so typically these have gone to Ways and Means when they exceed $5,000.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Schill. And Representative Carlson, do you agree with that?
I agree.
Okay, Representative Davids?
Okay.
Okay. Is there anybody who'd like to testify for or against this bill? Do we have a quorum? We need two people of the tax committee who are sitting in their offices listening to this on the tape to come down here and check in so we can move this bill. So as soon as two people arrive, the motion will be to send the bill to Ways and Means, and then what we're going to do after that is recess. So maybe since we're done with your bill, but we're just waiting for a quorum, Representative Erickson. Representative Benson has a question. I was going to go over what we'll do tonight. Representative Benson.
Go ahead. Go ahead. But I do have a question for the author.
Okay. So here's Representative Marquardt. We still need one more person. Representative Benson, your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, I would, if you'd flesh out a little more the impacts of this legislation on school trust lands, You made a brief comment about the ability to sell land, a three-year use provision, and the fact that the lands cannot be sold. What's the impact for the school trust fund
and Erickson.
That this bill would impact?
No, that's okay. You can ask staff if they can help you out.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, I'm going to call Dave Schuler to come up here and
welcome Mr. Schuler.
He will be way better able to answer that.
No, we almost recessed, and now Mr. Schuler has to speak. He was thinking he was getting out of here. Welcome, Mr. Schuler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dave Schuler. I'm the lands coordinator for the Division of Forestry in the Department of Natural Resources. To answer Representative Benson's question, it actually really has no effect on trust land. This bill has to do with tax forfeited land that is administered by the county and held by the state.
Representative Benson, and we do have a quorum. Representative Benson, would
you
be willing to move this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't be long, except I'm on the commission, and so I...
Would you be willing to move the bill, 740, for possible inclusion? Or two ways and means?
Yes, I guess.
Okay, so Representative Benson moves House Bill 740 to ways and means. Representative Benson.
Representative Erickson, you made reference to the school trust lands, and maybe the testifier can explain to me what are the connections, if any.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, there really are no connections. Representative Erickson, I believe he spoke in error when he mentioned trust lands. It's the school forest bill, and it's confusing that they both have school in them, but basically school forest is a program that the Department of Natural Resources runs for education. We work with schools to help educate kids, get kids outside into the outdoors to learn outdoor education. But it really has no effect or tie-in with trust lands.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now I do want to move the bill.
Okay, great. Thank you. So the bill's before us. The motion's to send it to Ways and Means. We've already called for public testimony. Unless there's other questions, all those in favor for ways and to send it off to Ways and Means, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Okay, so the ayes have it, and your bill is off to Ways and Means. Representative Erickson. So
thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members. We're going to go into recess, and Representative Davids and I were just talking about the omnibus tax bill, and we are taking it up tonight at 7 o'clock. It's going to get posted at 6. There's still some things going on a little bit. So it'll be online available at 6, and then we'll be back at 7 o'clock to begin walking through the omnibus tax bill. Questions? Otherwise, we're in recess. Representative Garofalo.
Just a quick schedule for the week. Can you just walk me through what the tax committee is going to be doing?
Well, tomorrow, members, we're here in the education finance bill first thing when we get here at 9. And for folks who are new to the committee, a number of larger bills come through this committee, but we stick to just the tax provisions as we hear those. So we'll hear education finance. And Representative Davids and I were talking about this. Then we'll start the tax bill again. We want to get to public testimony, maybe even to amendments. We'll see, because really the floor will dictate what we're going to do and how long we're on the floor. And then after the floor, we'll come back and we'll go through the omnibus transportation bill. So we're trying to get through education and transportation to get them off their way to Ways and Means tomorrow. But we'll hopefully start the public testimony on the tax bill tomorrow, and hopefully start the amendments tomorrow, and then Wednesday we'll do more of the tax bill, hopefully finishing it on Wednesday. So we do have a bill coming as well from Representative Portman that I will just tell you is my intent is to include it in the bill if everyone's okay with it, but it's going to get heard after the introduction, and it's a she'll tell us about it, but it's a Fortune 500 company that's looking to come to her area that the governor and the speaker and Senate Majority Leader have been working with for the last few months. So they just got language today, and you'll see it on introductions today.
Are we going to propose they come here so we can raise their taxes, or is it? I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
That'll be their decision. Representative Garofalo.
Okay, so tomorrow, education, transportation, and then hopefully, dependent upon the floor schedule, then Wednesday would try to pass the tax, or
yeah,
the committee, the majority would pass the tax bill out of this committee.
Okay, it's possible tomorrow, but it seems unlikely given those two big bills coming through, but Wednesday, yes.
Sure, thanks.
Okay, Representative Davids.
I'm sorry.
Representative Earhart.
How much does a Fortune 500 company want?
Well, that's in the bill. You know, I'm not really sure. Mr. Michael, can you tell us what's in that bill? Is it a sales tax? I think it's a construction exemption.
Madam Chair, yes. It's a two-tiered sales tax exemption. They're coming in, planning to occupy an existing building, but their plans are that they're going to build a much larger assembly facility later on, and so that it's that later construction that would, you know, generate most of the cost for the building materials.
And I think a TIF too, maybe. And I apologize, just so folks know, the reason it has nothing to do with Representative Portman. She's carrying it because of the local community. It just took till now before we got the language from the governor's office, so we'll hear that one. Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So basically, tomorrow after floor session, we don't know how long that'll be, we're looking at transportation finance.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. Anything else? If not, we're in recess until 7 o'clock. Thank you. We're going to call the tax committee back out of recess. And as we come out of recess, there are the cart with documents for the public is coming down. So it's on its way, but we want to get started. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the minutes for April 4th, April 9th, April 10th, and April 11th.
Discussion to those four sets of minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Loeffler. We're going to start with a walkthrough here. Every member, can I just say, can you, when we're done, put your bill and everything back in your packet, because duplicating would really appreciate it.
Yeah.
If everybody would keep their stuff, because we're starting up again tomorrow at 9 a.m., and if you can just shove it back in your packet when we finish tonight, and we'll just see how far we can get. Okay, so does someone want to help? There we go. Okay, we're going to start with that. I'm going to move House File 677 to get the bill before us, and I'll now move the D. No, maybe someone can help me with the motion. Is it the A130469?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll move the A130469 to get the bill before us. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Ms. Manzi, you're going to start us with Article 1. Thank you. And we're going to work off the summary. Is that right, everybody? Okay. Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Nina Manzi from House Research. Article 1 provides one-time provisions. It imposes a 4% surcharge on taxable income over $500,000 for tax years 2013 and 2014. The surcharge rate would be adjusted downward if there were a positive unrestricted general fund balance in the forecast, either in the November 2013 forecast or in the February 2014 forecast. Section 1 of the article provides for the adjustment in the surcharge rate. Toward the bottom of the page, there are some bullet points that list the priorities for using unrestricted general fund balances. This would add a new one after the property tax recognition shift for the surcharge rate reduction. The first two of those, the cash flow account and the budget reserve account, are fully funded at the level specified in statute. The next two, the school aid payment shift and the property tax recognition shift, are restored in this article, so those two would be satisfied. So the first item on the list in the November forecast would be to reduce the rate of the surcharge if there were additional revenues available.
I get it now.
Section 2 is the language that eliminates the property tax early recognition shift. Section 3 is the language that restores the education aid payment shift percentage to 90%. Sections 4 and 5 conform to federal increase Section 179 allowances that are in effect for tax year 2013. The increased allowance at the federal level is $500,000. That federal increase was only effective for 1 year to tax year 2013, so that's all that the state can conform to under this bill. Section 6 imposes the income surcharge of 4% of taxable income in excess of $500,000 for all filing statuses except for married separate estates and trusts, which are at $250,000. Sections 7 through 10 provide for the upfront exemption of capital equipment purchased by manufacturers at the time of the purchase instead of administering this exemption as a refund. Section 11 provides a safe harbor for the surcharge, providing that individuals subject to the surcharge would not be subject to penalties and interests for amounts that they failed to pay as required otherwise by law through July 1st, 2020 of this year. Section 12 provides appropriations to the Commissioner of Education that are necessary to restore the education aid payment schedule to the 90%, eliminate the property tax recognition shift. So there are three appropriations there. The third one is because of some timing issues related to the property tax recognition shift. And that is all of Article 1.
Who's on Article 2?
I also have Article 2, Madam Chair, if you'd like me to continue.
I think if we just go and then take questions when we're through it.
Nobody's going to have to.
See how many people are still away. Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Article 2 makes changes to the property tax refund program. It renames the homeowner property tax refund program the homestead credit refund, and it extends that program to a larger number of filers by decreasing the income thresholds for those with incomes over about $20,000. They go down from the maximum 3.5% in current law to 2% across many income ranges. It also changes the definition of household income for both homeowners and renters so that the first $5,500 of contributions to retirement plans is excluded from household income, while all distributions received from retirement plans are included in household income. Section 5 of the article provides for a one-time notification by the Department of Revenue to homeowners who appear based on previous income tax returns and possible homeowner property tax refund claims in the past to be eligible for the homeowner property tax refund, but who have not been claiming the refund. An ongoing issue with the property tax refund has been a low participation rate, and this I guess maybe not low, but it's somewhere around 60% participation rate. And the notification provision in Section 5 is intended to increase participation so that people who are eligible for this benefit that's provided in state law are actually claiming it. This would work by the counties providing the Department of Revenue with information on property taxes, which the Department of Revenue would then match to income tax returns in order to estimate eligibility so that they would know to whom to send the notifications. And that, I believe, Madam Chair, is the end of Article 2.
Ms. Dalton. Thank you. So Ms. Dalton or Mr. Hines? Or both? Representative Dabney,
Madam
I think
Chair.
Before they start, did you want to mention what you're intending to change in your division report? We don't have it on the spreadsheet yet, but the run, I think, is done with the change that's coming with your amendment tomorrow.
Madam Chair, in the division report included in the bill currently, we provide $60 million in property tax support for cities across the state. Property tax relief then for businesses and homeowners in those communities at $60 million. Tomorrow I'll have an amendment, $60 million this biennium, and I believe the omnibus reflects an $80 million, $20 million increase in the next biennium. I will have an amendment tomorrow to increase that property tax support for businesses and homeowners to $80 million in this biennium.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, because I think Ms. Dalton's run on LGA includes the Dabney additional $20 million to LGA. So thank you. Article 3.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research, and Mr. Hines and I shall be tag-teaming on Article 3. Section 1 and 6 relate to a surcharge, a $5 annual surcharge on homeowner and auto policies, which are then used to fund the police and fire aid, the PERA, police and fire aid.
Madam Chair, Steve Hines from House Research. Section 2 is an increase in the disparity reduction credit, the program that covers commercial industrial property in four cities on the North Dakota border, and it will buy the properties down to an effective rate of 2% versus the current law rate of 2.3%. Sections 3, 4, and 5 are changes to the Sustainable Forest Initiative Incentive Act program. In Section 3, the definition is modified to exclude properties on which conservation easements have been purchased from participating in that program. And Section 5 limits the amount of sustainable forest payments to one half of the property taxes paid.
Section 7 through 14 all reference the city local government aid program. This is essentially the LGA formula that was proposed in Representative Lean's bill, 1608, and was in the division report. It provides three separate measures of city need, one for large cities, one for medium-sized cities, and one for small cities. The two main differences from what has been discussed previously is that there has been a sparsity adjustment added to the large city formula for any city who has a population density less than 150 per square mile, and that is actually in Section 12. And then, as Representative Lincheski and Representative Dabney mentioned, the appropriation, which is in Section 16, in the language as it exists now, it would be $486.4 million for AIDS payable in 2014, $506 million for AIDS payable in 2015, and adjusted for inflation and population growth beginning with AIDS payable in 2016. Instead, that will now be changed so it is $506 million beginning with AIDS payable in 2014, and the inflation and population growth factors kick in beginning in pay 2015. And I forgot to mention Section 15. This was also part of Representative Lean's bill. It provides two aid adjustments, temporary, one for the city of War Road for 5 years for an extra $150,000 per year. This had originally been a permanent adjustment under current law, and this has been turned into a 5-year temporary adjustment. And then the other adjustments have to do with cities who were getting temporary aid that was supposed to expire in either pay 2013 or 2014.
Section 17 is an increase in county program aid by $30 million per year for pay 14, increased by increasing each of the two sort of half programs of county program aid, need aid and tax-based equalization aid, by $15 million. Just a one-time only increase by $30 million.
Section 18 is the inflation adjustment for the LGA formula, and Section 19 is repealers of obsolete LGA language. And with that, that's Article 3.
Madam Chair, I'll move on to Article 4, property taxes. And Sections 1 through 5 of Article 4 are relate to some number of miscellaneous provisions related to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and a very minor levy change in Article 2 in Section 2, changing their authority is the only tax part of those sections. Sections 6 and 7 are a bill that allows manufactured home parks to be exempt if they're being held by a dealer as inventory. Section 8 allows economic development property to be held off the tax rolls for up to 15 years for cities outside the metro under 20,000 population. Currently, it's limited to cities under 5,000 population. Section 9 is an exemption for a certain property in Minneapolis owned by a tribe that provides services to tribal members. Section 10 is an exemption for the Target Center, property tax exemption for Target Center, and Section 11 is a property tax exemption for the new St. Paul Ballpark. Section 12 is a personal property exemption for new electric generation facilities proposed to be built in four suburbs in the metro area. Section 13 is a valuation limit for Class 4D low-income housing property to limit them to $100,000 per housing unit. Sections 14 through 16 are a provision which grant a six-month grace period for service members who are on active duty for paying their property taxes. So it essentially delays their due dates by 6 months. Sections 17 and 18 relate to the Hennepin County mortgage and deed taxes, mortgage registry and deed tax, and basically provide the permanent authority or reassert their authority to impose those taxes, which had expired this year. Section 19 modifies the levy authority of the Cookora Hospital District. Section 20 reinstates Carlton County's authority to levy for cemeteries in the unorganized town of Sawyer. Section 21 extends the authority of the Northwest Minnesota Multi-County Housing and Redevelopment Authority to levy. Section 22 is a provision affecting a handful of farm homesteads in Marshall County that had to vacate their properties because they were flooded in 2009, and allows them to permanently retain ag homestead status because they can't move back onto the farm because of the floodplain. Section 23 directs Minneapolis and St. Paul to establish a joint governing structure for marketing, promotion, and scheduling of the Target Center and the Xcel Energy Center. Section 24 and 25 are a moratorium on assessors changing assessment behavior with regard to property used in the production of biofuels and other industries that use similar equipment. So Section 24 provides that they can't change the status of those for 1 year, and then Section 25 requires the Commissioner of Revenue to study the assessment of those properties and report back to the legislature by February of 2014. Section 26 is a reimbursement for tax abatements that were granted because of the tornadoes in Minneapolis in 2011, and the county did not get its certification in time to be reimbursed for the abatements. Section 27 is a study of the Iron Range Fiscal Disparities Program. And Section 28 repeals a section which had been expiring cities' authority to establish new special service districts or housing improvement areas. So essentially that reestablished their authority to make those, to create those kinds of districts. And then paragraph B is part of the Hennepin and Ramsey County mortgage and deed reinstatement.
Thank you. Section 5, Article 5.
Madam Chair, Article 5, Joel Michael in House Research, Andrew Biggerstaff, and I will go through Article 5, which is special taxes. I'll say two things about this. It includes the chair's bill on the sports memorabilia tax in it, and the chair's bill on tobacco and cigarette tax as they were heard by the committee, House File 91. So we're not going to go through those sections. And I'll let Mr. Biggerstaff go over the alcohol tax, which is from Representative Clark's bill, but significantly modified.
Madam Chair, members, Andrew Biggerstaff, House Research. The alcohol tax is contained in Sections 12 through 14. Section 12 is the wine and liquor excise tax. This adjusts the excise tax by roughly 7 cents per drink for each category of alcohol. Section 13 creates a small winery credit. This allows any qualified winery, which is a winery producing less than 100,000 gallons of wine in a calendar year, to be eligible for the credit at $2.08 a gallon for the first 50,000 gallons. It's a non-refundable credit, so it can't exceed the tax liability of the winery or $104,000. And Section 14 is a similar credit for qualified breweries. That credit applies for the first 50,000 barrels produced, and the maximum there, it's on the first 50,000 barrels produced. A qualified brewery produces 200,000 barrels or less, and the maximum credit is $528,250 a year, or the maximum liability for the brewery.
Thank you.
Those are the provisions of Article 5. We'll turn to Article 6, which Nina and I will do.
Thank you.
So I'll start first until she gets here. Article Sections 1, 2, and 3 are Representative Mahoney's Angel Credit Bill. Section 4 as well. And Section 6, we get into the... This article contains all of the provisions of the governor's bill on corporate tax, so it includes the repeal of FOCs. The only difference from the governor's bill is that it does not repeal the foreign royalty deduction, but rather reduces the 80% deduction to 60%. There are a couple of other features. It also includes Representative Hornstein's tax haven bill. And I think that's it for the corporate provisions that I should go over, and I'll turn it over to Nina for the individual.
Mr. Michael, did you say 60%? I think it's 50.
I'm sorry.
On the foreign royalty?
It is 50%.
Okay, thank you.
Trying to go too fast.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Ms. Manzi.
Soon to be raised.
Yes, exactly. Yes, thank you, Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Section 10 and also Section 4 previously, along with some other sections that we'll get to later on, are the federal update sections. These update to the changes enacted in the American Taxpayer Relief Act of 2012, the bill enacted by Congress in January for tax year 2013 and following years. The law passed earlier this year, House File 6, conformed for tax year 12 only. This bill would conform for all of the major provisions in the federal law with the exception of bonus depreciation, for which we would continue our requirement that taxpayers add back 80% of the difference between the federal amount and the state amount, and then subtract one-fifth of the amount added back in each of the five following tax years. One of the principal provisions conformed to is the increased standard deduction for married joint filers, which is made permanent under the federal law. With regard to the federal limitation on itemized deductions and the phase out of personal exemptions, Minnesota would not conform to those federal provisions, but would retain the limitation and phase out enacted last year at the state level as a separate schedule at the state level, and there will be more about that a little later on. One provision that you will not see here in Article 6 is the Section 179 conformity, which was contained back in Article 1. Okay, moving on, the next few pages of the summary go through in detail about the conformity items. Section 11 makes modifications to the additions to taxable income for individuals. There are a number of these that are obsolete. There are some provisions that Congress did not extend, and so additions for those are being stricken. This is where the standard deduction for married filers is conformed to. And then the other principal change in here has to do with the disallowance of the charitable contribution itemized deduction. There's an addition required in this section, and then a later section is going to provide a credit for charitable contributions. Section 12 makes changes to the subtractions from taxable income for individuals. Here the non-itemizer charitable contribution subtraction is eliminated. Non-itemizers will also be eligible for the credit provided in Section 20 later on. In addition, the subtraction for foreign subnational taxes that exceed the federal foreign tax credit is being eliminated. There are a couple of new subtractions here for the federal limitation on itemized deductions and phase out of personal exemptions, which are necessary to avoid phasing out the exemptions and limiting the deductions twice, since the state has its own limitation and phase out. And let's see, finally, there is a new subtraction for railroad maintenance expenses. This was Representative Beer's bill heard last week. These are, it's going to match the federal credit for the railroad track maintenance and upgrade expenses by short line railroads. And Mr. Michael will talk about the additions and subtractions for corporations, or maybe he already has.
I already have.
Very good. All right, then I'll continue. Section 15 is a new definition of state itemized deductions in order to make the separate state limit on itemized deductions work. Section 16 is another date change for the federal update. Section 17 is a new definition related to the tax haven provision. Section 18 is the individual income tax rates. This is the new fourth tier rate of 8.49%. There's a table that's split between pages 27 and 28 showing the levels of taxable income at which the new 8.49% rate would apply. This section also makes changes to the thresholds for the 7.05% rate and the 7.85% rate by adjusting them downward to offset the revenue impact of the federal conformity items in the bill, with the exception of the Section 179 expensing, which is offset elsewhere in Article 1. When you look at the brackets that are in the bill, it's important to remember that the brackets that are shown in current law for the income tax are the brackets that were in effect in tax year 2000, which is the last time there was a change to the rates or brackets. Those brackets are provided in the second subdivision right after these rates to be adjusted annually for inflation. So what's really going to be in effect for tax year 13 is quite a bit higher on the brackets than what appears in the statute. The second table there on page 28 shows you what the current law brackets would be for the 7.05% rate and the 7.85% rate, and then what those are adjusted to in order to offset the federal update revenue impact. Section 19 resets the base year for adjusting the brackets going forward, as well as the brackets for the new 8.49% rate. Section 20 provides the charitable contribution credit. It's an 8% non-refundable individual income tax credit for contributions that exceed the greater of $400 or 2% of the taxpayer's adjusted gross income. This credit is allowed against both the regular tax and the alternative minimum tax. Later on in the bill, there will be a section that disallows the charitable contribution subtraction under the AMT. So instead of recognizing charitable contributions separately for itemizers, non-itemizers, and AMT filers, everyone will be eligible for the same credit on the same basis. Sections 21 and 22 update cross-references in the dependent care credit that are necessary because of changes to the additions and subtractions sections earlier in the bill. Section 23 matches the increased phase-out for married joint filers in the working family credit to the increase in the phase-out for the federal earned income credit enacted in the American Taxpayer Relief Act. For tax years 2013 to 2017, the phase-out threshold for married joint filers would be increased by $5,000, indexed for inflation, and then in 2018 and following years, it would be increased by $3,000, also increased for inflation. Section 24 updates another cross-reference. Actually, what Section 24 does is it eliminates a reference in the marriage credit calculation to the fact that Minnesota isn't now conforming to the additional standard deduction for married joint filers. Because this bill conforms to that deduction, that adjustment is no longer necessary in the marriage credit. Section 25 is Representative Detmer's House File 62, which extends the current law military retirement credit to individuals who were honorably discharged and received retirement pay with less than 20 years of service. This is primarily individuals who retired during the downsizing of the military that occurred during the Clinton administration.
Sections 26 and 27 make the research and development credit a non-refundable credit and then goes back to making it a 15-year carryover, carry back. Sections 28, 29, 30, 31 are all minor changes to the historic rehabilitation credit that were from, I believe, Representative Mark Ort's bill.
Madam Chair, the only substantive, well, I guess they're all substantive in the eyes of those who administer the credit, but the most substantive change to the historic credit is the increase in the amount that the State Historic Preservation Officer may collect from developers as an application fee. The fee is increased from the $5,000 maximum in current law to 0.5% of the estimated qualified rehabilitation expenditures, up to a maximum of $35,000. Section 32 provides a tax credit for employers who hire veterans. This is modeled on the bills introduced by Representative Wills and Representative Bernardi. It's limited to the hiring of unemployed or disabled veterans. Representative Bernardi's bill was extended to a category called underemployed veterans, and then Representative Wills' bill applied to all veterans. The maximum credit is $1,200 for a veteran who's disabled, $600 for an unemployed veteran. It's calculated as 10% of wages. If an employer were to hire a veteran toward the end of the tax year, they would be allowed to opt to claim the credit in the following tax year so that they could qualify for the maximum. The credit's effective for veterans hired in 2013 through 2016. Section 33 is the alternative minimum tax for individuals. It strikes the deduction for charitable contributions that I referenced earlier and updates cross-references to keep up with other changes in the bill.
Section 34 eliminates an obsolete reference in the corporate AMT. Section 35 is the governor's provision that adjusts the corporate franchise minimum fee for inflation back to its original establishment in 1990 and indexes it for inflation thereafter. 36 is also a provision from the governor's tax bill that essentially adopts what's called the Finnegan rule for Minnesota in terms of apportionment. 37 is also a provision from the governor's bill that disallows the deduction for REIT dividends. And sections 38 and 39 are part of the federal update. And section 40 is the safe harbor provision for the new tax rates and surtax that are imposed. Actually, the safe harbors for the surtaxes in Article 1. Section 41 repeals the definition of FOCs, repeals the non-resident credit for taxes paid to their state of domicile, repeals the long-term care insurance credit, and the FOC provision in the corporate AMT. Article 7 is the estate and gift tax article. This article contains three bills, two bills of Representative Mullery's, the Representative Mullery's gift tax bill, and his bill that provided that non-residents who own pass-through entities with Minnesota real property or tangible property are subject to the estate tax on those interests. And the third bill that it contains is Representative Poppy's bill and Representative Erdahl's bill that clarifies the exemption rules for farms and small businesses.
Welcome back.
That I'll turn it over to Pat for Article 8.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there's a lot of small sales and use tax provisions, so it's just easier to go through this section by section. The first section is the sales tax on suites, box seats, and similar rentals in stadiums and arenas that was in the Vikings finance bill. Section 2 actually contains provisions from four different bills. The first one exempts the sale of coin-operated devices for amusement and entertainment as a sale for resale. The second one changes the definition of when a retail sale occurs and when the sales tax is owed on used motor vehicles leased on a lease-to-own or rent-to-own basis, so the tax is payable with the incremental payments instead of upfront. The motor vehicle repair paint, which is in Section 2 and Section 3, changes when motor vehicle repair paint and materials is taxable instead of it being a tax owed at the time that the auto body repair shop buys it. It's paid by the retailer based on a formula. And the final provision in Section 2 is a clarification on certain payments to electric companies as a contribution in aid of construction. The department didn't think this was necessary, but the industry had come forward with some people who had been audited for this. So it's really a clarification. Section 4 is Representative Dabney's bill, providing an exemption for nonprofit car sharing from the extra sales tax on motor vehicle rentals. And the other thing it does is it increases the tax on short-term motor vehicle rentals from 6.2% to 9.2%. Section 5 is essentially a clarification that goes with the car sharing exemption. Section 6 is the solicitor nexus exemption, or what people think of as the Amazon provisions to attempt to tax some of the online sales. Section 7 is reinstating the multiple points of use exemption certificate. This was repealed in 2008 when it was taken out of the streamlined sales tax. We are putting the language back in exactly as it came out in 2008. Section 8 is an expansion of the sales tax exemption for drugs and medical devices. It's very similar to a bill that was heard in this committee. The only difference is that the original bill had an exemption for anything purchased by under Medicare, Medicaid, or under a health plan. We went back and checked the streamlined sales tax. They allow the Medicare and Medicaid exemption, but they do not allow the health plan exemption. So that's the only part of the bill that was removed. Sections 9 and 11 relate to the reestablishing a sales tax exemption that used to be enjoyed by St. John's Abbey that was eliminated when they when they had to restructure their governance. Section 10 is a modification of the public safety radio communication exemption. It provides an exemption for not only the armor systems but other emergency public safety radio systems. It extends it to all counties. It is not retroactive. It is only prospective. Section 12 is the bill that was heard that essentially clarifies the sales tax exemption for nursing home and boarding care facilities to make sure they don't get caught in the Under the Rainbow court case. Section 13 is the sales tax exemption for an industrial measurement, manufacturing, and control facility that was heard in this committee. Section 14 is the building materials exemption for resorts and recreational camping areas that was also heard. Section 15 is a biopharmaceutical manufacturing facility construction exemption. This is the bill that will actually be heard in committee tomorrow. And it was language that had come from the governor's office. Section 16, 17, and 18 relate to all of the construction exemptions, and it just it provides the refund mechanisms for all of those. Section 19 is related to the change in the sales tax collection on rent-to-own and lease-to-own used vehicles, mainly to just make sure that the money continues to go to the Greater Minnesota Transit account and the county state aid funds. Section 20 and 21 relate to the local lodging tax bill that was heard that basically makes the local lodging taxes apply to the same definition of taxable lodging as the state definition, which means it applies to the online sellers, and it requires a local government to only require one payment per year from an accommodations intermediary, and they must notify all the accommodations intermediaries of the due date of the payment. Section 22 is modifies the St. Paul local sales tax to allow them to use a portion for other economic development funds. This is kind of in clarification of what was originally in the Vikings bill last year for all first-class cities. Section 23 extends the tax authority for the St. Paul local sales tax to December 30th, 2042. Currently, it expires in 2030. Section 24 and the repealer in Section 33 are Representative Liebling's Rochester lodging tax bill that basically allows the city to increase its lodging tax to 3% to pay for the Civic Center and then repeals the food and beverage tax authority. Section 25 is the St. Cloud. 25 and 26 are the extension of the St. Cloud regional sales tax to 2038 with a approval by the voters at a general election. Section 27 is the clarification of the project list for Clearwater, which has been heard many times in this committee. Sections 28 and 29 allow the City of Marshall to expands the use of their lodging tax and food and beverage tax to include the construction of the facilities that they are currently authorized to pay ongoing maintenance costs for, so they can essentially build the facilities. Section 30 is a validation of the taxes that were approved in 2010. Section 31 is for the City of Proctor, allowing them to do a post-validation for their additional bonding authority and sales tax in 2010 and 2008 special law. Sections 32 allow the City of Bemidji to impose a 1% food and beverage tax and a 1% lodging tax to pay the operating costs of the Sanford Center. And that is the end of Section 8.
Article 9 is the economic development article, and I know this may be disappointing, but I won't go through it but section by section, but we'll instead just list the bills that are in and note the changes to them. It includes Representative Dill's bill for Ely, Representative Erdahl's bill for Glencoe, Representative Lilly's bill for Oakdale, changed from what was in the division report to include the provision relating to the Bergen Plaza and extending and allowing an extension for both of those districts so that the first district has a 10-year extension and the second district has an additional 10 years added to it. Includes Representative Hansen's bill for the Dakota County Community Development Agency in West St. Paul, Representative Jorhorth's bill for St. Cloud. It includes the Minneapolis streetcar value capture, which is a version of what the transit TIF provisions that Representative Hornstein and Dane introduced. It includes Representative Newton's bill extending the four-year knockdown rule for those window districts, and it includes Representative Joanne Ward's Maplewood district. In addition, it includes the chair's two bills for Bloomington and our general law change allowing districts that have a large percentage of housing in them that suffered large reductions in captured value as a result of the market value exclusion to adjust their original tax capacity. On the Mall of America bills, there's an the fiscal disparities capture is extended by a year, and that additional revenue is used to pay for the old Cedar Avenue Bridge rehabilitation or renovation. As you recall in the original bill, this was to be paid for by bonding. This instead would use 1 year of fiscal disparities revenues to pay for that. And it requires the city, if it approves the extension or the imposition of the fiscal disparities, to use the revenues for that purpose. That's in Section 18 in the bill. Those are the provisions of Article 9. Article 10 is the Destination Medical Center provision, and the first thing I'd like to note is that if you look at the overview on page 50, approximately two-thirds of the way down the paragraph, it says $338 million. If you would correct that, the correct number is $327 million. This article is a modified version of Representative Norton's bill that provides authority to the city of Rochester to develop a destination medical center in conjunction with the Mayo Clinic. It's significantly changed from the bill that was introduced. If you will recall, the bill that was introduced provided for the establishment of a separate governmental unit that was essentially a development authority. This article does not do that, but instead has only, and that bill also had a private nonprofit corporation involved with the development. This article instead goes to a structure in which the city will establish a nonprofit that conducts most of the planning for that project, and then the city is the one that actually implements the plan. The city receives the aid, the city issues the bond. So that's the conceptual overview of the changes in the structure for the Destination Medical Center. I'll let Pat go through them.
Section 1 basically provides a sales tax exemption on construction materials and supplies used and equipment incorporated into the public infrastructure included in the development plan and financed with public money.
Section 2 contains the definition provisions for the article. Section 3 is the authority for or directs the city to establish a nonprofit corporation that will engage in the planning activities related to the Destination Medical Center. You can see in Subdivision 2 the membership of the governing body of the nonprofit corporation. On this board will be the mayor of the city or the mayor's designee, a member of the city council that's selected by the city council, a member of the county board that's selected by the county board, two representatives of the Mayo Clinic that are selected by the city from five nominees provided by Mayo Clinic, two representatives of the city business community that are nominated by the Chamber of Commerce, and two governor's appointees. This corporation, when it acts, would be subject to the public meeting rules, so all of its board meetings and other formal meetings would be required to be open to the public, and it would be subject to modified Data Practices Act limits. To the extent that it receives government money from the county or the city, all of the data that relate to that money would be government data that would be open to the public. And similarly, to the extent that it's following its statutory charge to develop the plan for the Destination Medical Center, the activities and the data that relate to that plan would be government data. But to the extent that it's interacting with private entities unrelated to those two things, in other words, to the extent, for example, it's receiving contributions and engaging in development activities that do not involve public money, that data would be allowed to remain non-public data. And it's expected that those provisions will have to be reviewed by the Civil Law Committee, which I think there are plans underway to do that. Section 4 is the directions for developing the development plan for the Destination Medical Center. Section 5 grants the city additional powers. It authorizes the city to exercise any powers of a port authority. Representative Norton's bill, which had a lot of new language in it for this authority, was essentially granting to that new authority powers that are very similar to the port authority powers. The drafting of that was modeled after the port authority law. What this article does instead is simply grant those powers by reference to the city and allows the city to use them in carrying out the development plan that this nonprofit corporation will develop. The city is also authorized to help fund the nonprofit corporation, and finally is authorized to issue bonds, general obligation or revenue bonds, without holding a referendum and outside the debt limits. These bonds, it's expected, will be secured by the state aid payments that will come, you'll see later in Section 7, I believe it is, and by other city revenues, including the additional tax authority that Pat's going to go through, or their property tax if they wish to pledge that. The city is prohibited, though, from issuing bonds that are secured only by the state aid payments. So if they're going to issue bonds, they need to be secured by a mix of revenues.
Section 6 relates to additional tax authority that the city is going to be granted. Under Section 8, you will see that there will, which Mr. Michael will discuss later, we will actually see that the city is required to pay $128 million of the non-transit portion of the revenue that the development plan was asking for. That includes the $28 million that is already in their sales tax authorization for their downtown development and for the DMC. The additional $100 million plus associated bond costs, we provide a number of different optional taxes for the city. We allow them to impose a local lodging tax, a food and beverage tax, or an admission tax. All of these taxes would be in addition to any other tax on those things that currently exists in law, special law, or in general law. The city is also authorized to either extend its existing local sales tax until 2041. Currently, the tax is probably set to expire in about 13 years. That's when it would meet its current obligations. So this would allow it to extend it to 2041 and use the additional money to meet their $100 million obligation. Or they can increase the rate by up to another half cent and use that money to fund it. And
The city's also granted two special deviations from general law with regard to the economic development abatement rules and with regard to tax increment financing rules. With regard to the economic development abatement program, the city would be allowed to have abatements that go beyond the duration limit that's in general law, and this authority also applies to the county. And they could have normally there's an 8-year waiting period. After you have one abatement, you have to wait 8 years before you can abate taxes on that same property. That also would not apply, and the overall cap on the amount of abatements would not apply, so long as all of this is going to fund the Destination Medical Center. On tax increment financing, they would be allowed to create redevelopment tax increment financing districts in this new Destination Medical Center district without regard to the blight test and without regard to being required to obviously spend money only to pay for blight correction. If you're designating areas where there's no blight, you can't be expected to spend money to correct blight.
Section 7 relates to county tax authority. The DMC request of $585 million is actually divided into two parts. $119 million of transit aid that they were looking for, and the remainder is general aid. The city portion is to go to the non-transit, and then the county is being requested to provide some help for the transit portion of it. The two authorities that are granted to Olmsted County under Section 7 is they may, by resolution, impose up to a 0.25% general sales tax as a transit tax, very similar to the tax imposed in the metro area, and or a up to a $10 per vehicle wheelage tax to pay a portion of these transit costs. Revenues from either of these taxes are dedicated to the county portion of these transit costs. That amount is limited to the amount raised by a sales tax of 0.15%, similar to the Twins tax in Hennepin County. Any excess revenues raised by imposing one or the other of these taxes may be used by the county to fund other transportation and transit projects within the county. The taxes imposed under this section would expire at the earlier of December 31st, 2041, or when the county determines that revenues are sufficient to meet their obligations under the DMC transit projects. And I don't know if, I think Joel's going to talk about the aid.
Section 8 contains the state participation in this project, which is titled State Infrastructure Aid. There are two components to this. There's a general aid provision that's designed to finance most of the improvements, and then there's a transit aid, which is designed to finance the public transit portions of the project. In both instances, this aid works so that once the Mayo Clinic has made $200 million of capital investment in buildings in the city of Rochester, then the aid is triggered, and what determines the amount of aid is the amount of expenditures by the Mayo Clinic for construction of buildings in the city of Rochester. And under the general infrastructure aid, every dollar over that $200 million threshold entitles the city, if it makes a qualifying matching contribution of its local sources of money that Ms. Dalton has just gone through some of the ways that they can raise that money. If they do that, then they will be entitled to state aid equal to 2.75% of that amount of the additional investment by the Mayo Clinic. The annual amount that they can receive under this is capped at $30 million in any year. Secondly, there's a total cap on all of the state aid that can be made of $366 million. In order to qualify for that, the city would have to put up through its own money, either by this one of these special taxes or from its property taxes or other revenues like abatement or TIF, $128 million to qualify for that full amount of the state aid for its general infrastructure improvements. For the transit aid, it's $119 million of transit aid. In order to qualify for that, the match is not stated as a dollar amount, but rather to qualify for the transit aid in any year, local money from either the county or the city equal to a general sales tax rate of 0.15 has to be provided. The rate on the transit aid is 0.75 of the investment over the $200 million threshold. So if you sum the two aid formulas, it provides a 3.5% rate times the capital investment by the Mayo Clinic over this $200 million threshold. And again, to qualify for the transit aid, either the county will have to impose this 1.5% general sales tax in the county, or they'll have to come up with other sources of revenue from the city and the county together that's equal to that amount in each year that they wish to receive transit aid. So there's not a dollar amount that's specified for the local contribution, but rather it's stated as a rate times their local tax base. And that the aid is sunset in fiscal 41, and I think that pretty much describes it, and I'll let Pat go through the rest of the article on the various special law tax provisions.
Okay. Sections 9, 10, 11 relate to the existing local sales tax in general sales tax in the city of Rochester. And as I stated before, Section 11 essentially allows them to extend the duration of the existing half-cent sales tax without voter approval to December 31st, 2041, provided that all the additional revenue raised from this extension is used to pay for the projects in the development plan. Section 9 essentially allows them to impose an additional general sales tax of up to one-half of 1% without voter approval. And Section 10 is the requirement that any of these additional revenues have to be used for the development project. Section 12 requires the Commissioner of Transportation to prepare a study related to the Rochester area. This is based on a provision that's actually in the Omnibus Transportation Bill, House File 1444, to examine transportation needs in the region, including interaction with the expansion of the Mayo Clinic. The only additional requirement that shows up in this bill that's not in House File 1444 is that it does require that the study include an analysis of the feasibility of high-speed rail between Rochester and the Twin Cities.
Thank you.
Article 11 is the mining taxes article, and I'll have Mr. Bigger's staff go through the cracked sand, silica sand mining provisions.
Section 1 is creates a special revenue account in the general fund for silica sand mining. In 2014, $2 million will be deposited. In 2015, $2.69 million. And 2016 on, $2
million. Yes, Section 2 is, I believe, Representative Metza's Taconite School bill that was heard in the vision and was in the report.
And then Section 3 contains the definitions for the silica sand mining tax. Section 4 creates an extraction tax of 55 cents per cubic yard on the mining of silica sand. It also creates, I believe it's a 15 cent per ton per day storage tax and a 3% of market value production or processing tax. For the processing tax, for any qualified processor, the rate is dropped to 1%. A qualified processor is defined as somebody who uses means to prevent silica sand from becoming airborne, so covered operations and things like that. And then there's an exemption from the extraction tax for anybody who ships less than 10% of their finished product on public roadways. I think that is it for that. Sections 5 through 8 are just administrative provisions that are the same as the Hansen bill that we heard.
And Section 8 is also a provision of the silica sand mining that just provides the interest rate. Sections 9 and 10 increase the taconite and the non-ferrous occupation tax rates to be one-half of the corporate franchise tax. They are currently one-quarter of the corporate franchise tax. Section 11 modifies the taconite economic development fund provisions to require, starting in 2014, that companies match dollar-for-dollar funds that they receive from the TEDF. Under current law, there's a 50% match that only applies to roughly half of the amount of money that they receive. Section 12 increases the taconite production tax rate by 5 cents. Section 13 increases the distribution to schools by 9 cents. Section 14 adjusts the amount of the distribution to the taconite property tax relief account to account for the additional school fund. Section 15 makes a conforming change.
Section 16 is the aggregate tax that allows counties to impose up to double the current statutory amount. And I forgot to mention the extraction tax. There's a credit provided for any person who mines silica sand in a county that imposes the aggregate tax
they receive a credit against the extraction tax for the amount of aggregate tax paid.
Section 17 provides three one-time distributions in 2013 from the taconite funds to the city of Hibbing, $2 million for water supply improvements, Mountain Iron, $1.7 million, and Tower, $1 million. Section 18 authorizes the commissioner of the IRRR to issue school district bonds for schools in the taconite tax relief area. These bonds would be paid by up to a 10-cent distribution from the production tax. Article 12 is the public finance article. This contains the chair's base bill with two changes. It deletes the fiber optic provision and the MAC investment provision. In addition, this article also contains Representative Anzelk's bill that allows bituminous overlays to qualify under the street reconstruction authority, and Representative Earhart's municipal street improvement district bill. There is a change in Representative Earhart's bill that restricts the allocation of costs so that no class of property can be allocated more than twice the share of costs that are allocated to the lowest class of property. This article also contains Representative Earhart's bill that provides for issuing Met Council transit bonds. And it also contains Representative Mahoney's bill that extends the St. Paul CIP bonding authority. Article 13 is the miscellaneous provisions, and it contains Representative Lesh's the provisions related to the 9/11 fee and the collection by the Department of Revenue. And it also contains the additional four-year suspension of the political contribution refund and the purpose statements for the tax expenditure changes that are in the bill are in Section 20 of that article. Article 14, which I will not go through, is the technical changes to adjust for the for enactment of the homestead market value exclusion. And the remaining articles of the bill, which I also will not go through, are the Department of Revenue policy and technical bill articles. With that, I'll turn it over to the fiscal analyst to go through the spreadsheet.
Thank you. Mrs. Templin and Ms. Schell, if we could, we want to get through the spreadsheet yet tonight. Ms. Templin, and we're starting on page one of the 19-page spreadsheet. Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff, for the record. Just looking at the summary page, this summary page shows the tax bills, total general fund revenue changes in the 14-15 biennium of $2.652 billion and $1.552 billion in the tails.
Madam Chair, for the record, Kathy Schill, House Fiscal. You'll also see on line four of the summary sheet the total general fund expenditure changes for tax aids and credits plus education. We'll talk about that when we get to that particular page. A total for fiscal 14 and 15 of $1.14 billion and in 16 and 17, $594 million.
Madam Chair, on line six, it shows the total general fund changes. This is revenues minus expenditures of $3.7 billion in the 14-15 biennium and $2.1 billion in the 16-17 biennium. The target for the committee is $1.14 billion, and the committee is at, or the bill is at, $1.11 billion for the 14-15 biennium. Moving to the second page of the spreadsheet, I just want to bring to your attention again that you're looking at state taxes, and this spreadsheet shows anything that's a positive dollar amount shows a revenue gain, and a negative dollar amount shows revenue reduction. I have to go through that every time just in case. And individual income tax, you can see, I try to show in this spreadsheet current law receipts for reference, but I will not go through them during this presentation. I will just cover the change items. And the chair's proposals are in columns AK through AP, starting with line 10. That is a new fourth tier at 8.49% for married joint filers at $400,000. That is estimated to raise $281.8 million in the 14-15 biennium and $290.5 million in the tails. Line 11 is the 4% surcharge at $500,000. That is estimated to raise $1.225 billion in 14 and 15, and that is there's zero in the tails because it is a temporary surcharge for tax years 13 and 14 only. Moving to line 13 of the spreadsheet, the estimated cost of full federal conformity to Section 179 expensing for tax year 13 only is $15.1 million in the 14-15 biennium, and it is estimated to raise revenue of $9.4 million in the tails. Line 14 of the spreadsheet shows for individual income tax the revenue impact of federal conformity with the income bracket adjustments in the bill. The detail of the provisions for federal conformity are on page 13, starting on page 13 of the spreadsheet if you want to refer to that later. The individual income tax impact, the estimated revenue reduction is $5.59 million in 14 and 15 and $3.385 million in 16 and 17. Moving to line 17 of the spreadsheet, there is a repeal of the long-term care tax credit. That provision is expected to raise $17.2 million in the current biennium and $17.8 million in the tails. Line 18 of the spreadsheet is making the R&D tax credit non-refundable. This is the revenue impact for individual income tax only, and it is expected to raise $4.8 million in the current biennium and $4.2 million in the tails. Line 19 of the spreadsheet is the subtraction for railroad track maintenance expenditures. This provision is expected to reduce revenues by $120,000 in the 14-15 biennium only. Line 20 of the spreadsheet is the Veterans Jobs Tax Credit. This is a non-refundable credit for employers. This is estimated to reduce revenues by $19.5 million in the 14-15 biennium, and it is expected to reduce revenues by $17.7 million in the tails. The line 21 of the spreadsheet is a credit for past military service. It has a negligible revenue impact, and negligible, again, is $5,000 or less, and it's negative negligible. Line 22 of the spreadsheet is the Historic Structure Rehabilitation Tax Credit. There are provisions from this bill in the omnibus bill. None of the provisions have a general fund impact. There are fee changes in the bill that have special revenue impact, and that will show in the non-general fund section of the spreadsheet. Line 23 of the spreadsheet is the Small Business Investment Tax Credit. Again, there are provisions in the bill, and there is a small change to qualifying businesses, and it has no general fund impact. Line 24 shows income tax interactions with income tax modifications in the bill. The estimated revenue loss is $2.3 million in the 14-15 biennium and $48.8 million in the tails. Line 25 of the spreadsheet is another interaction line, and this is with changes in the property tax levies. and this is expected to raise $1.475 million in the current biennium and $3.7 million in the TALES.
And Madam Chair and members, this is the start of certain items that you saw in the division report migrating to the revenue side of the spreadsheet. We'll have a few of these as we go through, so it will look different than what you saw originally in the division report, and other items have migrated to other places in the spreadsheet. So we'll point those out when we arrive to them.
Line 28 of the spreadsheet, moving on, line 28 through line 30 show the changes to the charitable contribution deduction. That deduction is being disallowed, and it is replaced with a non-refundable charitable contribution credit. On line 32 of the spreadsheet, the net impact is the estimated revenue gain from these changes is $43.7 million in 14 and 15 and $49.9 million in the TALES. Turning the page, line 36 shows the net changes to individual income tax of $1.532 billion in fiscal 14 and 15 and $305 million in the TALES. That is an estimated revenue gain. Madam Chair, moving on to corporate tax, I'll continue at this pace if this pace is okay, or I can go faster if you like.
Well, it'd be great if you could both be done by midnight.
We can do that, Madam Chair. That's a good goal. Line 45 of the 46 of the spreadsheet for corporate taxes shows the federal conformity revenue impact with the income tax bracket adjustments. Again, the detail starts for these provisions is on page 13 through 15 of the spreadsheet. But this line shows the summary of the corporate tax revenue reduction impact, and it is estimated to raise $9.9 million in 14 and 15. And reduce revenue by $9.1 million in the TALES. Line 47 of the spreadsheet is the cost to conform to federal Section 179 expensing. That is an estimated revenue loss of $6.4 million in 14 and 15 and $3.9 million in the TALES. A positive gain of $3.9 million in the TALES. Line 49 of the spreadsheet is the repeal of the FOCs. This is estimated to raise $44 million in 14 and 15 and $36.7 million in 16 and 17. Line 50 of the spreadsheet, this is the reduction in the foreign royalty subtraction from 80% to 50%. This is estimated to raise $65.9 million in 14 and 15 and $54.2 million in the TALES. Line 52 of the spreadsheet is the definition of Minnesota sales. This provision is expected to raise $46 million in the current biennium and $40 million in the TALES. Line 53 of the spreadsheet is foreign partnerships. This provision is expected to raise $12 million in the 14-15 biennium and the same amount in the TALES. Line 55 of the spreadsheet is the elimination of the real estate investment trust dividends. This is estimated to raise $2 million in 14 and 15, and the same amount in the TALES. Line 56 is the indexing of the minimum fee for corporate taxes and indexing the brackets. This is estimated to raise $18.7 million in 14 and 15, and $19.4 million in the TALES. Line 57 is the corporate part of the estimated revenue gain for making the R&D tax credit non-refundable. This is estimated to raise $83.8 million in the 14-15 biennium and $62.9 million in the TALES. Line 58 of the spreadsheet, this is tax havens. This is corporations chartered in foreign countries being included as a unitary group. This is estimated to raise $36.5 million in the 14-15 biennium and $28 million in the TALES. Line 59 of the spreadsheet is the subtraction for railroad track maintenance expenditures. This has a one-time revenue impact, or is a one-time estimated revenue impact of $80,000 in 14 and 15. And the total, going to line 64, this line shows the estimated revenue gain for the provisions In 14 and 15 of $316.3 million. In 14 and 15 again, and $254 million in the 16-17 biennium. Page 4 of the spreadsheet, we have sales and use tax. Starting on line 74 of the spreadsheet, the solicitor nexus definition is modified. This is estimated to raise $9.7 million in 14 and 15 and $12.4 million in the tails. Line 77 of the spreadsheet, this is the allowing the capital equipment to be an upfront exemption in removing the refund requirement. This is effective starting in fiscal 14, and the estimated revenue reduction is $139.6 million in 14 and 15 and $49.1 million in the tails. Line 78 of the spreadsheet shows the increase in the motor vehicle rental tax from 6.2% to 9.2%. This is estimated to raise $15 million in 14 and 15 and $16.5 million in the tails. Line 79 of the spreadsheet shows the imposition of a 10% gross receipts tax on sports memorabilia. This is estimated to raise $16 million in 14 and 15 and $18.8 million in the tails. Line 80 on the spreadsheet shows the estimated revenue gain for imposing the tax on admissions to stadium box seats and suites. It's $4.7 million in the 14-15 biennium as the estimated revenue gain and $6.1 million in the tails. Line 81 of the spreadsheet, the descriptor, I should modify that. It is not an exemption. This is the motor vehicle paint and materials and auto repair shops. This is providing a new method for calculating the taxable paint and repair materials. This provision is expected to raise $5.1 million in the 14-15 biennium and $5.7 million in the tails. Line 82 of the spreadsheet is a placeholder. This is for the exemption for construction materials for the Destination Medical Center. The estimated revenue loss is $4.5 million in 14 and 15 and $4 million in the tails. Line 83 of the spreadsheet, this is the construction an exemption for construction materials for an industrial measurement, manufacturing, and control facility. This has an impact of, in the tails. The estimated revenue loss is $815,000. Line 84 of the spreadsheet is an exemption for construction materials for the biopharmaceutical manufacturing facility. This is estimated to have a revenue reduction of $940,000 in the 16-17 biennium. Line 85 of the spreadsheet is an exemption for public safety radio communication systems and other public safety radio systems. The estimated revenue loss is $1.6 million in 14 and 15 and $450,000 in the tails. Line 86 of the spreadsheet is the multiple points of use certificate. This is estimated to raise to reduce revenues by $1.37 million in 14 and 15 and $1.560 million in the tails. Line 87 of the spreadsheet, this is the exemption for improvements at resorts and camping areas. The estimated revenue loss is $960,000 in 14 and 15 and just over $1 million in the 16-17 biennium. Line 88 of the spreadsheet is the expansion for the medical devices related to Medicare and Medicaid and other modifications. This is estimated to reduce revenues by $790,000 in the 14-15 biennium and $920,000 in the tails. Line 89 of the spreadsheet is the exemption for a religious order and a higher education institution. This is St. John's. This is estimated to reduce revenues by $143 million in the 14-15 biennium and in the 14-15 biennium and $105,000 in the tails. Line 90 of the spreadsheet is the exemption for coin-operated amusement machines. This is where entertainment machines are defined as a sale for resale, making them exempt from sales tax. This is estimated to reduce revenues by $380,000 in 14 and 15 and $460,000 in the tails. Almost done with sales taxes. Line 91, this is the exemption for nonprofit car sharing organizations. This is an exemption from the motor vehicle rental tax. This is, the estimated revenue loss is $75,000 in 14 and 15 and $95,000 in 16 and 17. Line 92 of the spreadsheet is the exemption for nonprofit nursing homes and boarding care homes. This has a negative, negligible impact in 14 and 15 in the tails. Line 93 of the spreadsheet is the exemption for payments made by to an electric cooperative, and this has no impact on the general fund, this provision. And line 94 of the spreadsheet is the modifying definition of the retail to include rent-to-own or lease-to-own. I should modify the descriptor. It should show also that it allows the sales tax to be paid incrementally. This does not have general fund impact. It has non-general fund impact, and that will show in spreadsheets at the end. The net changes to sales tax are on page 5 of the spreadsheet. In the 14-15 biennium, the estimated revenue reduction from these provisions in total is $98.98 million, and there is a $65,000 revenue gain in the tails. Lines 101 through 107 have no changes above the base. Line 110, we start with the cigarette and tobacco products tax. Starting on line 22 of the spreadsheet to line 127, which carries on the next page, this is these lines show the increase in the excise tax on cigarettes from 48 cents to $2.83. If you look at line 127 of the spreadsheet, this shows the subtotal for the estimated revenue gain from these changes. For this, on line 27, it shows $371.2 million in the 14-15 biennium and $370.8 million in the tails. Line 132 of the spreadsheet shows the estimated revenue gain for the tobacco provisions in the bill. The estimated revenue gain is $43 million in the 14-15 biennium and $49.1 million in the tails. And for the provisions related to little cigars, the estimated revenue gain is $20.1 million and $20.5 million in the tails. Moving to line 144 of the spreadsheet, the total changes to cigarette and tobacco taxes in the 14-15 biennium, the estimated revenue gain is $434.3 million and $440.4 million in the tails. Lines moving on to alcohol taxes. The bill has a tax increase that is the equivalent of 7 cents a drink. In addition, there are there is a small brewer's credit and a small winery credit. The net changes from these provisions show on line 157 of the spreadsheet. The estimated revenue gain is $349.3 million in the 14-15 biennium and $379.1 million in the tails. Moving on to minerals taxes, line 161 of the spreadsheet shows the increase in the taconite occupation rate from 2.45% to 4.9%. The estimated revenue gain for these provisions is $38.7 million in 14 and 15 and $40.6 million.
On line 165, you'll see one of those items once again that we saw in the division report. This one related to fracking sand. And you'll see that the description has extraction tax of 40 cents. That should be 55. and it discusses both the extraction tax and the processing tax and the changes that Mr. Bickerstaff went through. Total revenue gain in fiscal year 14-15 is $2.9 million, and then in fiscal 16 and 17, $4.1 million. The total then for minerals, you'll see for these two changes, both the taconite occupation rate and for the frac sanding provisions is on line 168. That total is $41.6 million and $44.7 million in the tails.
Madam Chair, moving to estate taxes, lines 174 through 180 show the estate tax changes. Starting on line 175, there is the imposition of the gift tax to and certain gifts in estate tax. This is estimated to raise $41.4 million in 14 and 15 and $65.2 million in the tails. Line 176 of this spreadsheet is the taxation on non-residents' property held in a pass-through entity. This is estimated to raise $12.8 million in the 14-15 biennium and $15.3 million in the tails. Line 177 of this spreadsheet shows the modifications to small businesses and farm deductions. These provisions are expected to raise $23.8 million in the 14-15 biennium and $47.2 million in the tails. The total net changes to estate tax show on line 170. The estimated revenue gain is $78 million and $127.7 million in the tails. Madam Chair, there are no changes on line the provisions on line 182 through 199 of the spreadsheet. Those are all current law tax receipts. Line 201 of the spreadsheet shows the total general fund changes based on current law and with the changes in the bill. Line 203 of the spreadsheet just shows the changes above the base. It's $2.652 billion in estimated revenue gain in the 14-15 biennium and $1.552 billion in the tails.
Madam Chair and members, moving to pages 9 through 12, you'll have components that you saw previously in the division report, and there are items that have been added to this. Lines 1 through 10 are the property tax refund changes. These are those changes that were discussed in Article 2 by Ms. Manzi. Lines 2 through 4, you will see the changes to the renter's credit. Line 4 in particular, you have, thanks for the reminder. Before I get started any further, remember now we're at the spending side of the spreadsheet, and positive numbers are increases to program expenditures. Negative numbers are decreases or cost savings. So these positive numbers are now spending. So line 4 shows the changes associated with the renter's credit changes totaling, and these impacts start in fiscal 15, so for the 14-15 biennium, spending of $15.5 million, and in the tails, $33.6 million. Lines 6 through 10 show the homeowner property tax refund changes. This includes the modification to the thresholds and also the exclusion of the retirement provisions. You've got three lines here. The threshold changes total $85.6 million in 14 and 15 and $179.3 million in 16 and 17. So that's a lion's share of the homeowner changes. The other big portion that you see for this particular item is the homeowner PTR notification provisions. That's on line 9, where in the first year of the biennium 14 and 15, you'll see the cost of $71 million, and then as it grows, as you go further into fiscal 16 and 17, it totals $148 million. Lines 12 through 28 or so show you property tax aid and credit changes, and this is the other part of the major changes in the spreadsheet. You'll see LGA changes in lines 14 through 20. And this is where the amendment that Representative Dabney will bring tomorrow. The first line, line 14 or so, you'll see the $60 million in fiscal 15, then 80, and then 80 again in fiscal 17. That amount will be added to tomorrow in the amendment. You'll see also that we've included the inflation adjustments, population growth adjustments, and property tax interactions. There are income tax interactions associated with this as well. They showed up on Ms. Templin's side of the spreadsheet. The total for line 20 is $58 million in fiscal 15, and for fiscal 16 and 17, $169.1 million. For county program aid, similarly, you'll see that you'll have both the aid increase of $30 million per year, and then you'll have the property tax interactions associated with them. So the total impact would be a positive $29.3 million in fiscal 14 and 15, and $58.6 million in 16 and 17. Moving down, you'll see Representative Lean's bill, House File 515. This I carefully renamed because there is a second provision associated with border city changes. This is, I've now entitled it Border City Zone Allocations. That's exactly what it's called in the law. You'll see, and that has not changed. It's 1.5 million in fiscal 14. In on line 27, you'll see Representative Lean's Border City Disparity Reduction Credits. This was added in full committee. That impact is $1.56 million in fiscal 14 and 15, and $3.2 million in fiscal 16 and 17. And then we have Representative Lencheski's changes to the sustainable forest credits. That's a cost savings of $2 million in fiscal 15 and $4.3 million in 16 and 17. Lines 29 through 55 are all property tax changes. All of these, at least through line 48, were contained in the division report. I will point out to you the ones that have been added. It's lines 49 through 55. And a number of these have impacts where the scoring was an unknown provision, and they need to be recorded on the spreadsheet, but we do not have a numerical impact. Line 51 is Representative Earhart's bill, Metro Area Transit Expenditures. There were property tax refund implications in fiscal 17 in this bill, $450,000. And then lines 56 through 60 or so are other funds, aids, and one-time appropriations. This on line 57, you'll see the suspension of the political contribution refund. This is for a four-year time period instead of the two-year time period that was presented in the bill and committee. Impact of that is a cost savings of $12 million in 14 and 15, and once again $12 million in 16 and 17. Line 58 is Representative Norton's bill. This is the general state infrastructure aid for the Destination Medical Center. That cost impact totals $16.1 million or so in fiscal 16 and 17. And then line 59 is the tobacco tax collection study in Representative Lencheski's bill. It's $100,000 in fiscal 14. Line 60 gives you total aids and credit changes. So it's slightly different, like I said before, to the division report. In fiscal 14 and 15, the impact is $250 million, and in fiscal 16 and 17, $594.1 million. The other part of the spreadsheet that is new are lines 62 through 70. These are the provisions that Ms. Manzi went over in Article 1 of the bill that talks about the repayment of education finance aid. The aid payment in line 65, $262.6 million in fiscal 14. The repayment of the property tax recognition, it totals $569.9 million in fiscal 14. And then there's a cost savings recognition shift that we will provide an appropriation for the K-12 bill, $21.7 million in fiscal 15. Those education finance items total $854.2 million. If you add that together with line 61, you'll find the bottom line totals in line 70, $1.104 billion in fiscal 14 and 15, and $594.1 million in 16 and 17. Pages 11 and 12 are the no cost impact items. Basically, the property tax changes are reflected in Article 4. The mining changes, I think that's Article 7. The local option sales taxes in Article 8. And on page 12, you'll find the tax increment financing provisions all reflected in Article 9. And that's the end of the aids and credit summary.
Thank you. Madam Chair, page 13 through 15 shows the detail for the federal conformity provisions in the bill. Would you, no, okay, that is for your reference.
I only would say, Ms. Templin, that members looking at them can see how complicated federal conformity is just by looking at those few sheets. And when you don't conform, I mean, those pages erase lots of problems by conforming, so. No, I don't think any of us, unless someone tells me, wants to go through each of those lines.
And then, Madam Chair, on page 16 of the spreadsheet, we have a spreadsheet for the non-general fund tax revenue changes. I should just have a caveat that there are a couple provisions that we are still waiting fiscal notes for, so this spreadsheet will change throughout the week. We are waiting for fiscal notes for the 911 fee and the TAM changes, and also the fee changes in Representative Marquardt's bill for the historic tax credit. But this spreadsheet will show the changes to the other non-general funds, such as the legacy funds and the special revenue fund and the health impact fund.
I will point out, Madam Chair, on page 18 of the special revenue fund, you will find the insurance surcharge provisions that were in the division report, Representative Atkins' bill. This is for the police and fire aides. All of that has shifted to this section of the spreadsheet. The remaining part of the frac sanding is located here, and then the Iron Range fiscal disparities money is also located there.
So that concludes our presentation of the spreadsheet.
Okay, thank you both so much. I am going to read the rule in committee rules to remind members that it's rule 6.20, which is a committee must not meet between 12 o'clock midnight and 7 a.m., and I intend to follow that rule. So I just wanted to say that, and we're going to start up again at 9. But questions? We have 9 minutes. Representative Earhart and Garofalo.
I'm curious about the health impact fee. I thought I saw it was taken out in a couple places, but it doesn't look like it from the spreadsheet.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, the amendment does repeal the health impact fee. So both the fee and the fund that it's deposited in are repealed, and and all of the revenues will simply go in the general fund. It'll be replaced by a tax.
Well, Madam Chair, are the providers still being taxed under another name or what? That's
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, the health impact fee is really a cigarette tax. And so, yes, the health impact fee of 75 cents a pack is eliminated, and then the cigarette excise tax is increased by an equal amount and then increased additionally by $1.60 a pack.
I think Representative Earhart's talking about when the cigarette tax was part of the provider tax in the HHS part. Mr. Michael, wasn't there a time when that wasn't originally part of it? Is that what you're talking about, Representative Earhart?
Well, I was talking about the original tax that was called health impact fee that we used to provide the MinTax.
Minnesota Care.
Yeah.
Oh.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, you're referring to the Minnesota Care Provider Tax?
Whatever. Yes.
Yes. That. Trying to think, there are no substantive changes in that tax in this bill.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had the opportunity to speak with the lead on the Republican side, Representative Davids, and there's not going to be any additional comments or questions from the Republicans tonight. We'll have a thorough debate on this tomorrow, but I just want to speak on behalf of the members of our caucus that this is a disturbing bill that is very concerning. And, you know, I think a lot of us had expectations that with you guys in total control that there would be additional revenue, that there would be additional taxes on the wealthy and corporations, but never did we think that it would be this large and this big. And it has deep and profound concerns for not only the state as it exists today, but what it would be in for the future. But that's a longer conversation for tomorrow, and I want to thank you for encouraging the staff to get through in an expedited fashion tonight. But obviously, serious and deep concerns about this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? If not, we'll see everybody back at 9 o'clock. We're adjourned.